Blog Talk Radio.
But he wasn't really taking any snaps or there wasn't any play. So Collaros is still under the quarterback. Game time decision for Owens. And, of course, with Kackert back, we're getting very close to having the full lineup here in Toronto. Now, in the rest of the country, things are a little different. Let's talk, first of all, about what's happening at the headquarters. At CASA CFL, what's going on there is Canadian Football League announced that it has fined Saskatchewan Roughrider quarterback Darian Durant for violating the CFL's social media policy by sending an offensive and inappropriate tweet in response to a CFL fan. The CFL also announced today that it has fined the Toronto Argonauts defensive lineman Leon Lang for a reckless and dangerous hit to the head of Edmonton.
Into their team, and
teammate. That's always a good thing. Now, Coach Benavides thinks the team is playing mediocrely. Is that a word? Short on wins that it is, it doesn't mean that they're out of a playoff spot. They have a great chance to cross over depending on how well Montreal plays and whether Hamilton can continue to play at least, 50-50, win-lose. Otherwise, everything should be fine. Now, of course, they brought in a guy named Rob Rouse. He's an import running back. He's a four-year letterman at Fresno State. He's only 24, and he was recently released by the Cleveland Browns. So he's born in 1991, height 5'6", 190 pounds, prototypical CFL running back. Now, the Saskatchewan Roughriders, hard to believe, and even this number just seems like it just isn't real after what we've witnessed from them starting the season. They're at 8-5. They haven't played well recently. The hope is that they will. They announced that they've signed import defensive back Rod Williams to the team's roster. And, as usual, they don't mention how much they're paying the guy. Now, they're still waiting for Sheets to come back. Sheets, of course, many are saying that's probably why they're having so much trouble. The running game has flattened out. And with that running game, Darian Durant can't surprise anybody with any passes. Now, Max Hall in Winnipeg will start again, thinking of of Winnipeg. Winnipeg has basically drifted out of contention here for a playoff spot. It's going to be really tough for them. The Hamilton Tiger Cats slipped to below 500 at 6-7. Ken Austin, obviously not happy with the loss to Calgary, but you know how it is. You got to bounce back in the CFL. You can't look, too deeply into what happened last week. But what you can look at is the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And, with the blessing of the CFL and the CFLPA, Chris Williams has reached a settlement. And, it's effective immediately. And Williams is free to attempt to sign with an NFL team. Should Williams decide that he wants to play in the CFL for the 2013 and 2014 seasons, he has entered into an agreement to play for Hamilton. So if he doesn't do well in the NFL, or if things don't work out for him the way he hopes in the NFL with a door to the NFL, the door is not closed for him to play in the CFL, but it will still have to be with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Now, Burris, now, this is not really Hamilton news. This is more CFL news. Burris is the last surviving starting quarterback this year. The last one. Every other quarterback in the CFL, starting quarterback at the beginning of this year, has been injured. Burris is the last remaining one that hasn't been injured. Unbelievable. I'll tell you, that's it. To me, I find it hard to believe. And the Montreal Alouettes are an enigma in the sense that they have the best defense. You'd almost think, I would not be shy enough to say that they have one of the better defenses in the league. Unfortunately, if you don't have an offense and your specialty teams aren't doing anything special, you end up with a 5-8 record, and that's where they are. The Toronto Argonauts, have come back. What can you say about this team? They're sitting 9-4, and think about that for a second. Four games that they won that they really didn't look like they were going to win at halftime. And you figure that turns a 9-4 record to a 5-8 record, which is the same as Montreal. So when we talk on the show about how little difference there is between a winner and a loser, and why I have faith in a team like Edmonton, it's simply because the difference between winning and losing in sports in general, but in the CFL specifically, is very slim. You really have to play really well, 100%. That extra yard that you might die for, the things that Riley does at this time don't help Edmonton as much as they will in the future. And I guess I can't get past discussing, while we're discussing the Argonauts, the hit on by Cleon Lang on Riley, one of my favorite players in the CFL. It was a sad hit to see, and sorry to see Riley get hurt. I'm sorry to see that Riley may very well not play the rest of this season, especially if his team isn't sniffing a playoff spot. That would be my guess. The only person that will protect Riley is someone other than him, because he definitely won't protect himself. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back after that. And I've got a couple little interviews I want to put through, and we'll do that when we come back. See you soon.
CO2. Chad Owens, favorite player ever. He's from Hawaii, playing in the Great White North.
He's not just good, he's real good.
He's into MMA.
From the gridiron to the octagon. He's got game. This is his game.
He's the total passion.
He's got the hard one.
He's got a great cup. He's a family man,
team player, dedication to the max. True blue through and through. I love watching this guy.
He's a highlight waiting to happen.
CFL on TSN. You need to see these guys play.
Don't forget, Mike Richards, TSN 1050, every morning.
1, 2, 3.
We're the Argos cheerleaders.
And you're listening to the Candace Frank live show.
We're the Argos cheerleaders.
And you're listening to the Candace Frank live show.
Yay! Woo.
Go Frank! Go Frank!
Go Frank!
Go Frank!
There you go, Frank.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you.
Unbelievable. Anyway, it is a wonderful day today. And as I said, I had a chance to see the equipment moving today. Watching Swayze Waters kick some footballs. Now, I live in Toronto. If I could be in Edmonton, Calgary, or British Columbia to go watch the other CFL teams, I'd be thrilled to do that as well. But regardless, this is where I live, and they practice mere miles away from where I live. So it's a thrill for me. Now, Chad Kackert looked dynamite. Incredible, in fact, in that game against Calgary. He looked like he was still playing Calgary at the Grey Cup.
Came out with so much energy in that game against Calgary. It was amazing.
Yeah, but you never know. Mindset can affect a lot of how you play. I haven't really noticed any difference in how I approach the game.
We'll take it from somebody from the outside.
But no, I noticed a difference in the production, but there's really no telling what exactly it was, because I don't know, maybe just the fact that I wanted to prove myself again.
And you did a good job of it.
So, appreciate that.
Yeah, no, you did it. You did a great job. To me, from sitting watching you play, it seemed almost as though you were picking up where you left off from the Grey Cup, and the rest of the stuff. How did you go about erasing? Like, is it just you were motivated, like what you said?
Yeah, and it's there's a contagious atmosphere out here. Watching the guys win three straight road games in the fashion they did, you know, you want to be a part of it, and. Yeah, there's a lot to prove, no matter what your record is, no matter what your personal status is. You got to prove yourself every day.
And good news is there's always something to work on.
Definitely. Always.
Thanks, Chad. And really good luck. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, you know, it's very important that as a player, when you get injured, I guess from my perspective, I developed an opinion, and I'll call it an opinion, what I was trying to point out about Chad Kackert. And you get a guy who wins the most valuable player at the previous Grey Cup and starts the year. And let's face it, we expect a lot more from players after they do that. What we don't realize and what we need to remember is the rest of the players in the league know that he won that award. And the coaches and the defenses, they all understand that they have to stop this guy, because there's a good chance that he's the reason why the Argos won the Grey Cup, if not the only one of the reasons. And as defenses work, they take apart one piece at a time. And Chad Kackert was one of those pieces that they needed to take apart. And he looked really good against Calgary, ran for 150 some odd yards, and was full value for those yards. And you know, brace and all. I had a close look at his brace today, and it's amazing that they can run in that thing. I tell you, you hit that brace with the wrong part of your body, it could hurt too. So it's a little bit of an Ironman thing going on, I think, possibly, if you want to look at it that way. All right, joining us is Mike. I've got just a short thing. As you know, we like to help. We have a charitable soft spot here on the program. And I got an update from Jason Pottinger on his latrine thing, where they're buying tickets for the game against the Argonauts on the 4th. Let me let him tell you how he's doing on this charitable drive.
That lights up. Welcome back, buddy.
Frank, thank you.
Not that much. How's that ticket sale thing going?
Good. Yeah, sold 150 tickets.
Beautiful. I did my part a little bit.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah, you promoted. I like that. I appreciate that. Yeah, we're sending 90 at-risk youth to the game, underprivileged youth, Toronto youth, and we raised over $4,000 to build a new latrine out of Smith County.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Yeah. You do a little bit.
Yeah.
Just keep it out there.
You know.
And hey, listen, good road trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Enjoy, bud. I bet it has.
Well, okay. So they've done well. Why should I tell you how well they're doing when the man who's making it happen can tell you how it's going? Okay, joining me now is Mike from Minnesota. Michael, buddy, how's it going today?
Going great, Frank. How are you doing tonight?
Good. I'm looking forward to this week. It's going to be a great week. We've got Hamilton's here in Toronto. I'll be at the game tomorrow. Oh, and to the listeners of the program on Fridays, we probably won't do a show on Friday. I haven't fully decided yet. I'll decide that tomorrow because I'll be at the game. And, of course, we've got Saskatchewan and BC, the second game on Friday, the second of a doubleheader. And we've got another doubleheader on Saturday, Montreal at Edmonton and Winnipeg at Calgary. Now, last week, we can go back to last week and discuss the four games last week. I don't think on Monday we discussed them too deeply, did we, how those games went?
No, we didn't.
Yeah, why don't we talk about that? And I'll start by saying when BC went into Winnipeg, I don't think many people were surprised that the score ended up 53-17. Winnipeg this year, even at home, has allowed 50-plus points. To my count, that's at least the third or fourth time this year. It started in the exhibition season with the Hamilton Tiger Cats and continued in the season. And then, of course, as recently as this past week, they allowed 53 points. What the heck is wrong with Winnipeg?
Yeah, they're just, you know, you can tell it's a classic example of when a team basically just gives up on the season as a whole. I mean, that offense, it's just abysmal. When an offense gives up, you know, basically 35 points to the defense, that's unbelievable. I mean, what can you say? I mean, you know, Tim Burke after the game looked so defeated. I felt bad for the guy. You could just tell. I almost hope for his sake that they just let the guy go, because I wouldn't want to be in his shoes going through that on a, you know, and having to go back to work and have that cloud hanging over you. That's unbelievable.
Sounds to me like you're suggesting that it would be a mercy firing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can hear them. When he does a press conference and stuff, the man just sounds totally depressed. I mean, it's a shame because, you know, he's a defensive coach, and his defense, for the most part, has been pretty solid this year. And they've got back to what they were doing in 2011 of pressuring the quarterback, generating turnovers, and, you know, playing solid D. But his offense has been so inept and just, I mean, it's beyond words. I mean, they're rotating quarterbacks. Neither guy seems to be the answer. They had a lot of faith in Chad Simpson at running back. He got hurt and hasn't really had a great year, and their offensive line's been a huge disappointment. So, I mean, what can you do if you're him, really, honestly?
Yeah, I guess I'm not really sure whether I give BC the total credit for the 53 points. And I think you're right. When you consider the defense outscored Winnipeg alone, the offense really didn't have that much to do. I mean, what's left is 18 points. So, you know, Tatu from Fantasy Island is doing a great job of being a quarterback, I have to tell you.
Yeah.
DeMarco is, you know, doing what he needs to do to win games. And, you know, I know as much as he's somebody you don't want to think about just by virtue of what he did to Saskatchewan, but he's been pretty steady, and he's, you know, he's made some great passes, and he's actually operated the offense in a pretty decent manner to not, you know, self-destruct, while the defense just tore the Winnipeg offense to shreds.
Yeah, it's really a testament to Wally Bono as just a talent evaluator and a scout, and the fact that he's able to just find these quarterbacks. It just seems like, you know, any, you know, you give him, doesn't matter who's there, he's going to get someone. Whether it was, you know, with Dave Dickinson back in the day, Casey Printers, you know, obviously recently Travis Lule, and you can just see that the guy's got an eye for talent. And I guess even though, you know, my initial thoughts when I first saw him was this guy doesn't look like he's even, you know, a quarterback. He looks like, you know, he looked like a kicker. I'm just going to say it again. But honestly, when you saw him, Frank, what did you think the first time? You thought, whoa, they must be doing a trick play with a kicker or something, right?
No, I thought he was the ball boy.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding. No, you know what? He's not a very tall guy. Let's face it. But you know what? Really, rather than be stereotypical, let's just say that he wasn't a prototypical quarterback in either of our minds. You know, he's a smallish kind of guy. But you know what are you going to do? I mean, I'd like to add to what you're saying as far as BC and Wally Bono is concerned. The thing about good teams that are coached well, that have great systems, that have an opportunity to baptize quarterbacks within a reasonable amount of time to give them an opportunity to understand how to operate the offense, they will turn out to be successful. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And we're seeing it this year more than any other year with BC, Calgary, Toronto. You know, so far, you know, Hamilton hasn't had to show us that because they haven't had any problems injury-wise at quarterback. Winnipeg, I don't think it matters. They could put Russ Jackson in there, and nothing good's going to happen. It's the offense. Montreal is all defense. I think you know you've made it very clear that you believe they're a very defensive team. And Saskatchewan basically hasn't really tested the subs as much either. So really, I think it's very simple: is that if you have a plan and you share that plan with all the quarterbacks. You know, nowadays the CFL takes seriously having three quarterbacks, you know, on the team. The Argos have more than three. You know, they have more than three. Technically they only have three, but they have Gale there as well. So, you know, these are guys that are learning the trade. And they're learning it under, you know, guys like Ricky Ray, Durant, you know. These are all, you know, Burris. These are all wonderfully experienced quarterbacks. And then bring in the fact that the management teams, the coaches, to me it seems like the coaches have become really good in the CFL. And really they become so good that if you don't have a good coaching staff, it shows.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a great point you brought up about with Wally Buono and his ability to just prepare guys behind the scenes and over the years, and it's totally like Winnipeg's the opposite side of the spectrum, where unlike that they're basically signing guys and throwing them out there and basically with no CFL experience whatsoever. Like Max Hall, basically they just pretty much handed the guy the ball and said good luck out there. And you know, it's just you look at the good teams like, you know, BC, Calgary, Toronto, and Barker's done a great job with it this year, which is cultivating talent behind his, you know, premier starters, like whether it be Ricky Ray, and like you said, they got four quarterbacks, and you know, all of these guys are talented. I mean, Trevor Harris, you know, even though people haven't seen him as much, for those who got to watch him in the preseason, that guy, he's a really talented quarterback, and I think had they had him in the place of Caleros, I think he would have had just as much success, to be honest with you. But and it's just a testament to the great GMs and coaches, like you said, and you're seeing the separation of who's good and who's not, as far as, you know, Saskatchewan, while they were good early on, you know, and we talked about this, they were so top heavy with so many big salary players. Now when these guys start going down, the depth is just not there. Whereas in Calgary and in Toronto, even though they suffered so many huge injuries, because their general managers have done a great job of spreading the money around and making sure to have depth behind their key starters, they're able to keep on going, even though they've lost, you know, a lot of key players. On the flip side, the Riders are sliding like they're going down a grease chute, and they're just, I don't even know what to say. I mean, it's just, it's really a testament to Barker, John Huffnagel, and Wally Bono as just being the top executives in this league, hands down.
You know, it isn't something good to talk about for, you know, veteran players, because the fact remains that the difference between a veteran and a rookie, you know, can be very little, but the difference financially can be a lot, and it is a dangerous, you know, line that they're walking, you know, when it comes to who they let go. And we've watched the Argos let go some pretty big name guys. Guys you would figure without them the team would suffer desperately, right? With drastically, whatever. But, you know, they haven't, and I think they haven't because of what you said, and that is that they've spread the money around and they've spread the idea of a team around. They've replaced they replaced the idea of having a guy that can win it for you, rather have a team that can win it for you. In fact, I've got an interview which I'll play right now, which I did today, and it's with Jaleel Carter. And we discussed that. We'll go to that interview right now, and I'll get your opinion on the interview.
Okay, I'm with Jaleel Carter. Jaleel, the defense has been really outstanding this year, hasn't it?
Say it one more time. Okay.
The defense has been outstanding this year.
The defense is clicking. We're getting better every week. We're getting to where we want to be. We're not there yet. You know, we're not there yet, but we're getting there. We're definitely getting there.
If I defined you as a quiet defender, would you be offended by that?
Quiet defender?
Like, you do your job, you're a low-maintenance guy, you know, you're able to understand what needs to be done.
Yeah.
So you don't jump into people's... Like, we'll put it this way. You notice defenders when they make a mistake.
True.
You don't notice them when they don't. You haven't been noticeable out there. That's what I'm trying to say. Your consistency in not allowing a big play, what do you attribute that to?
Preparation. It's all about preparation. It's all about preparation. You have to know what the offense is trying to do. You have to know. You have to film. Film is everything. Film is everything. I'm learning that this year more than ever. Film is huge. You always, if there's ever a doubt in your mind about something, it's because you didn't watch enough film. You didn't prepare enough. And I feel like coach does a good job in instilling that we should be watching film. You know, it's a part of us now. You know, we have it. We all have our iPads.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has iPads now. The whole team has iPads now because you know we watch film on our own all the time. I never had an iPad before. I never watched this much film. I always had to, you know, put it in the VCR. But I could take this. I could take my film wherever I go. How was that Denny's last night watching film?
Yeah, when you're waiting for your food.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, it's a big deal. It's a big part of our success.
Let me ask you something else. This year, more than last year, they showed some games on NBC, which basically means that people in the U.S. family,
right,
friends, can watch the game. Have you noticed more people watching the games, hearing from them?
Actually, I have. I never know which channel the games are on. I wish I knew. You know, I wish I knew what channel they were on, but people find the games, and they call, and they say, wow, you guys are doing really well. Pretty refreshing, you know, because most people don't know a whole lot, you know, about the CFL, and you know, we put in all this work. You know, it's nice sometimes to, you know, get congratulated for it, to get recognized for it.
It's NBC. You can stream it, which means just like you can
on the computer,
you could watch it on your iPad.
Oh, okay.
You could do all that. I guess the reason I ask is because it seems to me this year more than other years, there's a lot of intensity out there. A higher level of intensity than I've seen in previous years.
Yeah.
Is it an illusion on my part, or do you think that there seems to be a gear that the league and all the teams and all the players, whether it's better coaching, you know, quarterbacks that are coming in, first-time quarterback like Collaros comes in and does so well.
Yeah.
We haven't had that kind of depth in our football teams in a long time.
Yeah.
Do you think it has to do with the fact that that there's better coaching and that kind of stuff going on?
I haven't played a whole lot of professional football. You know, this is only my second year. You know, I had made it to camp with the Rams, but I consider this my second year professional. So I can't speak on a whole lot of other teams, but I can speak about this team, and our coaching staff is awesome. Like, we have a great coaching staff. They do a really good job with personnel, with our players. They do a great job bringing the right type of guys in, you know, and it's like plug and play. Like, they bring the right guys in, and we just gel together. You know, we understand things. Nobody's above the system. You know, it's a lot of guys you bring in, like NFL guys. You'll bring an ex-NFL guy over or right from the NFL, and their ego. You know, ego gets in the way, you know. And you can't play like that. You can't have your ego above the system. Nobody's above the system, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Our whole team right now understands that. Everybody understands their role, and it's been giving us success so far.
So Coach Jones and Milanovic probably did great chemistry.
Oh, yeah.
In school, right?
Oh,
they got the chemistry thing
so
figured out.
I don't know. Coach Jones tells us all the time he can't do anything but coach. So, I don't know. I just...
Thank goodness.
Right? Right? Yeah, that's true.
Thank you, Jaleel.
Thank you.
Have a great
appreciate
day.
Appreciate
it.
You too.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot, man.
Well, there you go. Jaleel Carter, defensive player on the Toronto Argonauts, and he raised the issue of what might make it successful in the CFL today, and that is you don't need high-profile guys. And I think, Mike, that's I think what we were saying, I think. Don't you think?
Yeah, that was a great interview. And if I could just add, that's the cool thing about CFL players. Like, honestly, Frank, I don't think you could do that with an NFL guy, just walk up and really just have a general conversation with the dude. That's pretty cool that you guys have that kind of access to the players.
Well, I'm going to take some of the credit for that because that's the way I like to interview. I like to be a part of the, part of the explanation as to, about the game. I love the inner workings of the game. I love the idiosyncrasies of the game. And I really do believe that in football and in sports in general, you get out of it what you put in or try to get out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can talk at various levels in football. Just like you can say, well, what makes a great team? Well, the higher score. Or you can talk about defense, or you can talk about defense and offense, or you can talk about specialty teams. And the nice thing is that when it comes to sports and success, you have to talk about more of the game than less, rather than less. And that's what makes teams successful, in my opinion. So, I enjoy doing those kind of interviews.
Yeah, that's great. And, Jaleel Carter is one of my favorite players in the league. Like, I really pay attention to guys on defense, and I appreciate coaches that have good systems. And I'm a real big fan of Coach Jones. And I think he's just, I was kind of surprised by the guys they let go last year, like Evan McCullough and Pacino Horn. And, I was thinking to myself, why would you let guys go who, seemed like they were pretty solid players, but then you realize that they just really didn't fit his system, and he wanted those big physical corners like he had in Calgary, and you can just tell that Jaleel Carter and Pat Watkins, they fit that, that prototype of what he wants as a defensive back, guys that are big and can get physical with receivers and can challenge guys and, play one-on-one, and, both of them, we saw Carter do that the first game of the year against Andy Fantuz in the corner. He just went man for man, pound for pound, and just beat Fantuz with the ball. And, when you got guys like that, you can afford to leave them by themselves, and you can blitz linebackers like Ball and McCune and get that pressure on the quarterback. So Jones is just a fantastic coach and a great eye for talent.
Yeah, and the difference between offense and defense for I'll keep on the vein of being a fan. You notice the good offensive players because something happens. You don't notice the good defensive players because nothing happens.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean. I mean, outside of what of what Patrick Watkins did with the two picks and the knockdown, that kind of stuff obviously sticks out. But what I mean is that to win, big plays on defense are awesome. They're great, but they're wasted if there aren't a lot of little plays done. And that's what you're referring to when you're talking to Jaleel, and that's the point I was trying to make with him, is that if a lot of times in some defenders, they're not flashy, but they get the job done. Low-maintenance guys. And those are the kind of guys that it appears to me, and I agree with you, that Chris Jones gravitates to. Guys that'll do the job, and he just has to wind them up, and they take care of it. And I like the term that Jaleel used, plug and play. Just guys that you plug in, and they play.
Right, true. And man, it's just a great time to be a fan of the Argos, man. I got to give it to you, Frank. This is after 3-4 years of just being, you remember how it was, basically 08 through 2011, they were completely irrelevant. And now, we're really on the just watching just greatness. And this team honestly, are they that far behind the back-to-back champs of 95, 96? I mean, they're really headed in that same direction, and it's amazing.
Well, you know what, I'm being totally 100% honest with you, Mike. For me, the most important thing is I want to be one of the – every year there's about 5 or 6 teams out of the 8 that have a shot at winning the Grey Cup. If your team can be in that position year after year, you got nothing to complain about. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, and it's easy to say that because, damn, I wouldn't want to be Winnipeg fans right now. You know?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And I'm not saying this to rub it in to the Winnipeg fans because I have all the respect in the world for all CFL fans. But it's tough when your team doesn't look like it has a shot. You know, it definitely can't make going to the stadium, you know, that exciting. You know, it's like being a Leaf fan in previous years where you're just hoping they win a game when you go, you know.
Right.
You know, but in the sense of now being an Argo fan, it's a great feeling. It's a great feeling that, you know, we know this team is good enough that they'll beat the Ticats on Friday, maybe even beat them again on Thanksgiving Day the following week. You know, and we'll derive a lot of satisfaction on them beating Hamilton, as much as Hamilton will derive from beating, you know, the Argos. And I just love the fact that I could say this, and I'll, thank goodness John isn't on the phone because he'd probably slap me on the side of the head. You know, Hamilton can still win the Grey Cup. There's nothing stopping them from winning the Grey Cup. There's nothing stopping the Montreal Alouettes from winning the Grey Cup. There's nothing stopping Edmonton from winning the Grey Cup. And I haven't ignored the three big guys in the West because they're obvious, you know, contenders for the Grey Cup. So there you go. You've got seven teams out of the eight that are still in the picture, you know. And here we are at 75% of the season, you know, said and done.
That's true. I mean, the point, that, especially with Hamilton, if you remember when Ken Austin won the title in 07, the Riders were second in the West. I believe they may have had a 500 record as well. And they went on the road, and they won the West Final at BC where they were huge underdogs, and they made it to the Grey Cup. So, I mean, Ken Austin has a proven track record in that department of pulling off some improbable Grey Cup runs. So, you know, he's got a quarterback in Burris, even though we know he's been struggling lately. When Burris is on and he's on fire, he's there, right there with the best of them. So you never know. If he gets hot during the playoffs, hey, you know, the sky's the limit for the Ticats.
Absolutely. I agree 1,000,000%. And, you know, and it really doesn't matter. To me, that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. To me, it's a good thing. There's nothing I look forward to better than beating a good team. You know, it's all well and good that we talk about the Argos being, you know, a good franchise and, you know, they've got a great thing going on right now. But, you know, there are a lot of other teams that are having great years as well. You know, I'd love to be a Calgary fan right now. I'd love to be a Saskatchewan. I'd still love to be a Saskatchewan fan. You know, just it's a little rough light right now. But, you know, that you got to expect that through a whole season, right?
Yeah,
and there's nothing – and I wouldn't mind being an Edmonton fan. Needless to say, you know – you know, it's a great year. It's a great year in the CFL because even when the number one quarterbacks have gone down, teams have found younger quarterbacks to keep them in the picture. And people aren't, and no team is backing into the playoffs. All right, maybe Edmonton, you know, might back into the playoffs. Montreal, you know, I wouldn't call them, if they make the playoffs, I wouldn't call it backing into the playoffs. I would call that surviving. Total destruction, you know, to end up in the playoffs. So, you know, I mean, you know, as Montreal fans, if your team makes the playoffs, you're going to be really happy knowing, I mean, we should be happy they made the playoffs. They're good enough. The defense, if you love the defensive side of the ball, you got a team to cheer for. Yeah, CFL year has been really good. I know we're shameless promoters of the CFL, but that's just the way it is. Now, before we... I digressed because of what we were talking about, and I went to the Jaleel Carter interview. We stopped at just talking about BC and Winnipeg. So I guess we agree that BC is a team that is to be a concern in the West for the opposition. Winnipeg, not so much. That brings us to the Calgary game in Hamilton, where Hamilton really didn't look that good. But I don't think they were as bad as the score indicated. What did you think?
Yeah, that's true. You know, in the past couple of years, their Achilles heel has always been their defense. But I think we both can agree that their defense has come a long way, and they've really improved quite a bit. And Orlando Steinauer, I think, has done a great job of getting his guys to buy into his system. And they're starting to show. It's just, it goes back to the quarterback, you know. And you've been on Henry Burris all year, and I think you've been spot on when you said, you know, before the end of the season that he could get benched. And I think... a poor performance this Friday, and I think that may be the last time Burris may start, honestly, unless, you know, our favorite guy, Lefevre, can struggles at all. If he can come in and do anything, I think it's his job to lose if Burr struggles on Friday.
Well, it is at the point where in my conversation, I'll have an interview with Milanovic in a bit, not now, but in talking to Milanovic, it's a bit of a good thing. These injuries, there's, you know, while there's a flip side, the injuries suck because your team now is prone to being taken advantage of or developing a weakness, right? But there's a flip side. All of a sudden, you can turn that weakness into a bigger strength, and by that I mean, you lose Ray, you find Kolaros. You lose Kackert, you know, you find Jackson, I want to say Jackson.
Norwood,
thank you. You know, and then even now, this past week, Owens has been down. Trent Guy gets, you know, specialty teams player of the week. So,
yeah.
You know, injuries aren't something to be afraid of in the middle of the season. They're something to deal with and also to work with. And, you know, Hamilton needs to put in the other quarterback only because he needs some reps. He needs some live game action in case something happens to Burris. So, yeah, you're right. I have felt that Burris and Austin's system, Burris is maybe not 100% set, you know, and basically a good fit for Austin's system. Having said that, you know, that's why Lefevre's there, and they can try that on for size if they like, you know, in the event that Burris gets injured. But why wait till he is injured, especially at this time of the year? I think Hamilton's pretty safe. If we see Hamilton win against Toronto this week, I don't think I'd be surprised to see Lefevre quarterback for them at home the following game.
Yep, true. And, you know, man, I just forgot the thing I was going to say, but wow, I just totally blanked out there. I had a great point. You go ahead, Frank. I just totally spaced out there. My bad.
That's all right. That's all right. So basically, Hamilton on offense, they've always been good. Defense, we both agree, they've improved. And really, the 35-11 score is more a credit to the team Calgary that lost to Toronto the week before and wasn't going to be denied this week. That to me is how I would summarize that game between those two teams. Calgary was just fired up, and they were ready to win.
Oh, yeah. Calgary is just, you know, coming from myself being a Rider fan, I always kind of have, you know, I've grown to respect Calgary quite a bit because I've seen just how, I mean, and it starts at the top. John Huffnagel, we got to give him credit. The guy's one of the best coaches. He's a great general manager. And he just, I don't know how he does it, but it goes back to your point of plug and play. I mean, they've lost a lot of great players, and even at quarterback. I mean, it's been a revolving door, but unlike Winnipeg, their guys have been able to step in and perform. And it looks like Drew Tate's actually supposed to be back this week. We'll see how long he lasts, but, you know, I mean, it's amazing that it just shows just how great a guy like Huffnagel is in comparison to what's going on in Winnipeg. But the one thing I wanted to add to for Hamilton, and just to throw out a guy who could be an X-Factor who's sort of new on the roster, they just signed a player by the name of Brandon Banks. This guy was a player for the Washington Redskins, and he was a really returner. He's really in that Chris Williams mold of a small, shifty guy with a ton of speed. This guy was a world-class track athlete. And I would not be surprised if he comes in and makes some type of an impact, whether it's on special teams, whether it's just being a deep threat at receiver. But watch out for him. I think the Argos special teams, forgot the name of the coach, Mike O'Shea, he's got to have his guys prepared. They got to cover. They got to make sure to watch out because a guy like that with that big of a field, his eyes are going to just be the size of golf. I mean, like, as you know, Sauce is just looking at all this room he's going to have, unlike he did in the NFL. So he's going to be dangerous. And speaking of Chris Williams, did you hear the news?
Yes, I mentioned it on the show, actually.
Okay, wow. How about that? After all this, the man finally got his freedom, huh?
Yeah, he got his freedom. But, you know, of course, the Ticats are saying we're not waiving our right to him if he doesn't make it there.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to make it in the NFL?
Between you and I, do you think maybe this delay may be costly?
It may be, but there's a lot of big injuries, and so injuries usually open teams get desperate if they need a guy.
Well, hey, listen, he's, you know, I have very little belief in, you know, put it this way. In the CFL,
yeah.
there's plenty of talent that is more than conducive to playing in the NFL. Unfortunately, there's some talent in the CFL, and most of it, and I hate to say this, and I'm going to get probably slapped around by a few people, but it's about size. You know, there are a lot of guys with size in the CFL that could play in the NFL because they have at least quasi-NFL size. The CFL is a much bigger game. It's a much bigger game. It's much more conducive to bigger players. And, you know, so Williams isn't a small guy. So I give him a shot. He'll have a shot.
Yeah, and the guy that he reminds me the most of the NFL is DeSean Jackson of the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't know if you've noticed, but their games are very similar. They both are great returners, and they both have, like, I think they're almost the same size, honestly. They look, they're both like 5'9", 5'10", and super skinny. But they both have, you know, top-notch speed, and when you got that kind of speed and that ability to return, I mean, that's a real skill that's almost impossible to coach. And what we saw Williams do, that's pretty tremendous. I mean, you have to have vision. You have to have the ability to, you know, it's all timing. It get to a certain hole and seam in time before it closes up. And if you got that gift, hey, you know, that's a rare commodity. And I'm sure someone in the NFL will give him a shot. I mean, Marcus Thigpen, he's been doing a pretty good job in Miami. And I'd argue that Williams is better than Marcus Thigpen. So
yeah,
he can do it. He might do it, yeah.
I think once you get past size, the mobility that is required in the NFL, the other thing that's glaring to me is the ability to take a hit from bigger guys. You know, it's a little tougher game in the NFL, right? And that to me, the ability to take a hit is going to be the other thing that needs to be answered.
True, that's true. And I think he actually was in the NFL before, right? I think he was with Cleveland and a couple other teams.
Yeah,
like
I believe he was as well. And you know what? Pretty much every CFL player who has any kind of previous talent. I mean, we've got a Heisman Trophy winner in Canada playing in the CFL, right? So you know, obviously he had enough talent to play in the NFL. I can't believe a guy that wins a Heisman can't play in the NFL. He may not, but I'm not saying that. I'm saying that he could play in the NFL. You know, when you talk about receivers and that kind of size, the guy that impresses me is Tasker, Steve Tasker's son. I don't remember his first name, but he impressed me.
He signed with the Ticats?
No, with Montreal, I think. He's playing with Montreal, isn't he? Oh, no, is it the Ticats?
I think it's the Ticats.
Yeah, okay. No, because I used to love Steve Tasker in the NFL. That's when I was actually following the NFL, is in his era.
Oh, okay. And speaking of another son of a great former player, one of the greatest Vikings of all time, and Chris Carter. His son is tearing it up in Montreal. My gosh.
Did you see him just eat up the angle from the defenders?
Did I see it? Oh, I was fell to the ground in pain. You got to be kidding me. But he's got some real serious talent. And the thing is, like, unlike his dad, because I used to watch the Vikings all the time back. I mean, when he was in his prime, his dad was all about just having great hands. But his son has got some serious wheels on him. That guy could move.
Yeah. He made the defenders look like they were standing still, literally.
Really. Yeah,
literally.
And the cool thing is that Chris Carter was able to come up to Montreal for a couple of games, and I think that was pretty awesome. And he was even at the he was at Touchdown Atlantic. They interviewed him.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. I saw the interview, and he actually I think he scored a tie.
Yeah.
What's his name? The TSN interviewer. I forgot his name. He said he liked his tie, and he said, "Oh, you can have it."
Oh,
I guess, why not, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so that brings us, of course, to Calgary and Hamilton, and now I guess we can talk about Toronto and Edmonton a little bit, not too much. We talked about them on Monday. Edmonton, for want of another term, they basically were given a lesson in experience, I think, is what they could take away from that game. And the Argos can look at it as another few pounds of confidence that now they're carrying around with them.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure if you go down to practice this week, you're going to see you know, the guy's chest sticking out a little bit more. I mean, because that's just an amazing accomplishment. You know, winning four in a row on the road, you know, staying on the road the way they did and pulling out those wins. And to, like you've been saying all year about Edmonton, you know, even though they may not make the playoffs this year or may not be competitive, they're definitely heading in the right direction. I think we both can agree, unlike Winnipeg.
Absolutely.
You know, and they got a quarterback. If you want to sell hope, like, that's the thing, like you said earlier, Frank, if you think about it, every team has something to hang their hat on. Their fans have something to say, okay, at least we got this going for us. In the case of Winnipeg, it's just a stadium, but at least they got that. And in Edmonton, they may be struggling, but my God, they found themselves a franchise quarterback. You know, they went through last year of, you know, Steven Giles and then Kerry Joseph and then Matt Nichols. And it just, you remember, it was a revolving door last season. But they found
Absolutely.
Their guy. And if they can just keep, this guy can just stay healthy, they've got a legitimate, I think, Grey Cup winning possible quarterback if in the next 3-4 years. So, you know, hey, all the Edmonton fans, if there's any listening, you definitely got to keep her there. And if I were in Edmonton, I'd definitely get the guy's jersey. I think he's a great quarterback.
And you know the irony of all ironies is in the playoff game against Toronto here in Toronto when Tate broke his leg, it forced Edmonton to change the plan a little bit because Tate was their guy, and they really brought Riley in as a backup from BC. You know, he wasn't penciled in as the starter. So it's really been an interesting series of events, as we said earlier, where you can take a bad experience and turn it into a good one if you run it right. And in a way, Edmonton was kind of lucky that they decided, well, we're kind of screwed now. Tate's down. We don't know how he'll come back with that terribly broken leg. I mean, when he was practicing in February, people were amazed that he was actually healthy enough to practice in February. But they didn't know that when he got injured, and they didn't know that when they made the trade with BC. So, you know, it goes to show, you know, they made a good move, and now they've got, you know, Riley, a great quarterback, and Tate's not a bad guy either. I'm not Tate. I'm sorry. Not Tate.
Nichols.
Yeah. Nichols. Sorry. Sorry. I've got Tate on the brain. Nichols. Yes. Yes. They felt that you know, when Nichols got hurt. Yes, you're right. When Nichols got hurt, they needed another quarterback because they weren't sure Nichols would make it back to prime time. So they got kind of lucky, and you know, it's amazing. But I'm not sure that without any goading, this guy Riley needs to be more protective of himself, you know. At one point, it's fine for him to establish his character, you know, for the benefit of his teammates. But at another point, he has to also be there for his teammates each and every week, even though what happened to him has nothing to do with his chance taking. You know, that wasn't something that happened through his chance taking that he likes to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's not out because he took an unnecessary risk. He got taken out by bad circumstances, and an illegal hit as it turns out.
Yeah, which
so,
if
yeah.
we can add wasn't a malicious hit, like it
no,
wasn't
no,
intended
no.
to be a dirty hit. Yeah.
No. But I'm only saying this from the perspective of, you know, he didn't invite the hit. The hit came along with what the situation, which was, you know. They weren't sure they had him on the ground, so, you know, he was in midair, and, you know, unfortunately, you know, you get penalized for something like that. So, yeah, so, you know, Edmonton, I think, is in good shape next year. I thought maybe that we'd see a little, and I still think we'll see a little blip on their, you know, success scale. And now I guess we can talk about the game that you really want to talk about, or you want to forget about. Do you want to forget about this game? Montreal-Saskatchewan?
No, let's definitely talk about it, absolutely.
I couldn't watch that game. I kept trying to watch it, and I was getting sick watching the game. I really was. I could not believe how inept the offense of the Saskatchewan Roughriders has become.
Yeah, and let's also add Montreal's offense was terrible, too. I mean, they were,
yeah,
they
yeah.
were, you know, I mean,
well, it
was, yeah, that
it was
a case of, yeah, go ahead.
It was Montreal's defense that won the game, you know. It was Montreal's defense. They were just outstanding, and I really, you know, I don't want to criticize the Saskatchewan team because they don't deserve the criticism. But it was an amazing. It truly was an amazing game to watch, And really, I had a lot of disbelief in what I was seeing. Montreal was full value for it, and I just can't believe how low Saskatchewan is dropping. Next week, that brings us to next week. We've discussed Montreal's defense, how wonderful it is, and that's really the definition of that victory. It was, you know, their defense. So now this week, we'll start with Saskatchewan, even though they're the game two on Friday night. They're going into BC. How's this going to pan out? BC's been very hot. Saskatchewan's been very cold. Do you see your team, Saskatchewan, in trouble in this game?
Yeah. If I could add before we get there, too, about that Sunday game. You're not going to believe this, Frank. I know it was they're going up against the NFL. You know what the ratings were for this game?
You don't have to tell me. I know that already.
Yeah.
I already know that from previous years. CFL games do well on a Sunday.
Really? I mean, if you look at on TSN, it was 818,000 viewers, and on RSN, they got another 180,000. So we're talking about over a million viewers. And that's just, I mean, how great is that for the CFL? Going right up against the NFL, that's fantastic.
We discovered that a few years ago, Mike, that the CFL games on Sunday do well against the NFL. Don't forget, in my opinion, this is my opinion only, okay? I have no basis in fact on this. As far as I'm concerned, there are a lot of NFL teams. Mm-hmm. And amongst all those NFL teams, there are Canadian football fans that have their team that they like, whether it be Dallas or Baltimore or or Pittsburgh or New England, right? Or the Vikings, whatever. But there's small pockets for each of those teams. But they relate more to the teams when it comes to two Canadian teams playing against each other. They'll keep their eye on the NFL team. But I believe that they care about watching the two teams that play in their country, one of which might be in their city, and they're watching. You know what I mean? And I think there's a subtle attachment for the Canadian Football League by all Canadians, even though you might think, even they might think, the people themselves may think that they think less of the I can picture people actually watching the game going, don't tell anybody I'm watching this game, eh? Please? Don't tell them I'm watching this game because I'm an NFL fan. You know, I'm a New England Patriots fan. Don't tell anybody I'm watching this game, right?
Right.
I truly believe that's the case. We're almost, like a guilty pleasure. The CFL is almost like a guilty pleasure to some Canadian football fans. And that's sad. And that's sad. And the numbers actually tell you that, Mike, because when you're sitting on the outside, you're saying to yourself, wait a second, I thought Canadians didn't like the CFL. Wait a second, I thought they preferred the NFL. Why are these numbers coming back this way? Unless they're lying. You know, that's an option. I don't think they are because, you know, the fact that they're paying the CFL now to show their games is just proof that it's not a lie, that they know it's true, right?
I mean, it's the same station. It's TSN. You know, they have Sunday Night Football and they have CFL, so they have nothing to lose than just keeping up front about what the numbers are. And the fact that Sunday Night Football generally gets about 400,000 viewers and the CFL averages over 700,000, I mean, just that in itself just says all you need to know. I mean, that's amazing. And, you know, and like you said, Frank, I mean, because the honest truth is and we've said this before many times, is that the CFL is a more entertaining game. I mean, flat out. Let's just be honest. Let's call it like it is. The NFL gets a lot of hype. It has a lot more money, a lot more media attention, as we pointed out. But when it comes down to it, and we're talking about just strictly from an entertainment value, and when you consider how much of a value you get on tickets, I mean, is it even close?
No, it's not. But also, we'll have to remember also that when we have a stinker, it's really obvious.
Oh, that's another thing. Yeah, true. like what happened on Sunday. Oh, my gosh. I feel bad for those 800,000 people that had to sit through that. Wow. But about the Friday game with BC and Saskatchewan, first, if we could add, the BC Lions are expecting the largest crowd of the year. They're already talking about it being over 40,000, so it should be a great crowd. They're going to wear their gunmetal black uniforms again.
That's right.
Yep. And the Riders, of course, are going to be wearing their all-whites with the white helmet. And there should be a ton of Rider fans at that game, so the atmosphere is going to be great. You're going to get probably a 50-50 crowd, which is always cool to watch. And, you know, I know the BC Lions are doing well and they're on a hot streak, but, man, I just got the feeling that this is when the Riders turn it around. You know, I feel like the BC Lions, honestly, Frank, they're the cockiest, arrogant, most arrogant team I've ever seen. And it starts with their defensive backfield. And I'm naming names. It's Corey Banks, Dante Marsh, Gordon Parks. Those guys, come on. Ryan Phillips, I'm calling you out too. You guys are the cockiest. I just want to see Durant light him up because they always give him so much crap when they play him. It's unbelievable. The level of trash talk and just, to me, you know, and if you listen to Rider Radio, they always bash Calgary for being a classless group of guys and the way they carry themselves. BC epitomizes that to the umpteenth degree. And I just want to see the Riders, for the sake of all dignity and, you know, just go out there and just beat the guys. My God, just win and let's get off this losing streak and let's just get this thing right. We're going to host and we're going to be in the Grey Cup. That's all that matters. And that's all I got to say, Frank. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you got Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney, you know, shaking in their boots because you pretty much made it black and white on a lot of scores. You know, it's going to be a game that's strictly black and white. So, yeah. It's going to be an interesting game. Won't eat color that day. And by that, I mean color TV.
It's going to be one of the best Friday night doubleheaders in a long time.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
When you figure both those games, first of all, have teams that don't like each other. Second of all, you can't pick two more meaningful games this weekend than those two.
Yep. And
I mean,
even the crowds. I mean, think about it. At the Argo game, it should be a nice big crowd with a bunch of Ticat fans. And in BC, the same thing, big crowd and a ton of Rider fans. So that's going to just generate a great atmosphere, whether you're at the game or watching on TV. And you got to love games like that. That's awesome. It's going to be a playoff-like atmosphere, and I'm really looking forward to it, man.
Okay, well, so am I. Listen, let's take a short break with an interview. We're halfway through the games. We'll still talk about Montreal and Edmonton, Winnipeg and Calgary. I'm with Manasi Gebrendi Greben. Oh my God, I'm going to say this name.
You butchered that thing so badly. Wow.
Manasi, is that good?
Yeah, but you got it perfect on the first name.
Okay, Gebremedin. Oh, you anglophonized
it. There you go. That's actually how it's pronounced. But yeah, go ahead.
Gebremedin. Okay, Gebremedin. I prefer Mike from Minnesota. I don't know why.
Got it. Yeah, just make it roll up the tongue easier.
I'm just kidding. I don't know. I'd like to learn how to say your name, your real name. So as I said, I was at the practice, Mike, and I also had a chance to talk to the coach. And I had a nice little conversation with him. And I'll tell you something. I love this guy. You know, you can see why the team's a winner. And it's not a surprise. So I talked to him. It's about 4 minutes and 28 seconds, Mike. If you want to take a break, you need to do something. This is Coach Milanovic today at U of T.
Chad looked pretty good running around out there, but obviously going to get a different story.
Chad Owens?
That's right, Chad Owens.
Yep, he'll be a game-time decision. He's doing well. We'll keep evaluating him, but hopefully he can go.
In terms of Ricky, what's his latest on him?
No change.
At all. Offensively, what are you expecting from Hamilton?
Well, I'm much of the same. They're very dynamic. They got speed. They got playmakers. Henry's a mobile quarterback with a big arm. So we're going to have to do a good job of containing him, keeping him in the pocket, and you know, not letting him kind of buy extra time and make those big plays down the field. But it'll be a challenge. It's a good football team, a good offense.
And Gables has played very well against you guys at Wilson.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, he's a talented back and good in open space. You know, a guy that can run. It's always going to be a game against them where you have to be very disciplined and be in your gap and do your responsibilities, because the second you make a mistake, they've got the skill guys that can take advantage of that and burn you. So it's going to be a great test for our guys.
How hard is it for a coach to come back from a four-game winning streak? And there really are a lot of questions. The team didn't really play that well or consistently. How do you work on that and get the guys to understand that winning isn't everything? It's how you play that counts, too, the bad habits. Muscle?
Yeah, that was a lot. That was a shiny question. Yeah, I mean, we're always, win or lose, we're always working on what we need to improve on. And we did a lot of good things. Our defense is improving. Our special teams, I believe, is improving. But anytime you have the number of penalties we had in the first half, and obviously the way we've started offensively, I think guys understand that there's plenty to work on. And we have no illusions that we've arrived or we're where we need to be to do what we want to do at the end of the season. And this really hasn't been a problem for this team, is going back to work and understanding that you need to continually get better over the season if you want to be the team that does it at the end.
You have a luxury where your team's playing really well and you've had a lot of injuries. It must be good to be able to work your guys in when they're totally healthy, guys like Owen Cacker.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing to find younger, new players that can step up and perform for you, because you know, even in the playoffs, that one of your top guys could go down. And so makes a situation where, you know, the guys have confidence in. Last year when Pat Watkins went down in these finals, Jaleel had barely played and had to go in and do it. So I think the depth gives us some added benefits, and having that many good players, you know, where you can feel like if guy's a little nicked up, you can sit him down and you don't think he'll miss too much. That's it's a big deal.
Starting the season, you had in the threat.
Yep.
Now all of a sudden you have Childs as well.
Yeah.
Embarrassment to Richard.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to go that far, but we're very comfortable with where we're at receiver. You know, we got some young guys, we got some different guys, some guys that can elevate, a guy like Chad Owens and Dury that are on after the catch guys, and, you know, we have good Canadian depth there too. And so that's a spot I'm very comfortable with right now.
One question has nothing to do with the game, but the fact that the games are being broadcast in the U.S., does it have anything to do with the players' motivation, do you think?
It's a good question. I didn't even know they were. So,
well,
I doubt it.
They're broadcast on NBC.
Yeah.
And
all of them are?
Every game?
Yeah.
This year?
Maybe. Maybe it is an extra motivating factor. I would hope that winning and losing and
the
earning their paycheck would be enough.
They say more hellos to family.
Oh, do they? probably.
The
well, you probably have a point there then.
You talked extensively already about how good Pat Watson has been.
Yep. Well, I mean, the thing that happens is when you get one guy in the secondary that's playing well, teams will go away from him. So the other guys will see more balls, and they need to take it as a positive and say, yeah, they get more opportunities to make plays. So I'm hoping that's the way they look. But Chris mixes it up so much between zone and man that, you know, kind of hard to go away from one guy all the time. But I think we're getting more and more comfortable with our secondary. They're starting to kind of come together as a unit, and, you know, we need to keep getting kind of plays that Pat made last week. Thank you.
That, of course, is Chuck Milanovich, the coach of the Toronto Argonauts. And, the nice thing about doing your own show is that you can talk to a coach for 5 or 6 minutes and air more than 10 seconds. So that's what I like about doing the program. But doing as good a job as I, or even better, are the Argonauts, and they have their own. They do it on CFL.ca, and you go to the Toronto Argonauts, and you can see a lot of interviews with all the coaches and all the players. My contribution is based, I have a little different, I might ask one or two different questions, but, you know, it's all about asking the questions of the coach that interest me, and he understands the questions I'm asking and the intricacy of the game, where he was referring to the fact that, like Jaleel Carter will do his job, and then all of a sudden Patrick Watkins will do something spectacular, and then what it means is that they're going to try Jaleel Carter and then get a surprise. So, yeah, that's what team defense is all about, you know. Do your job when the ball heads your way. You know, they fly around. That's what they try to do, and they're very successful, and they have a great coaching team there with Jones and of course, Milanovic. It's a good team. Yeah, so as we talked earlier, it's good to be an Argo fan right now, but, you know, there are a lot of other teams in the league that it's good to be fans of. So, Mike, any additions to that interview that I did with Milanovic that you want to add?
No, other than just, the guy's a great coach, man, and I love his pre- and post-game speeches. TSN always posts them before and after their games, and the guy is awesome. He's to me, epitomizes what you want a head coach to be. You want a guy that is smart, that knows how to, you know, game plan and knows how to call plays at the right time, and knows how to get the most out of his guys, and also knows how to be a great motivational speaker, and you know, get his guys fired up and get them locked in and know what they need to do. And yeah, the Argos, they definitely found an absolute keeper, and I think they probably want to hold on to him as long as they can before the guy moves on to a bigger thing.
Now that could very well happen, but the nice thing about being a football fan is there'll always be another team to love and another coach to love. So, you know, hopefully, I don't want to see the Argos. This is a question I asked John. That's why I asked John that question last week, is I wanted to know how long he thought before the secret of Scott Milanovic is out.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that maybe 3 years.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, the one thing that would keep it from happening is that he doesn't necessarily have a lot of NFL experience and connections, you know. Like, Trestman had so many connections and he had been so involved in the NFL prior to the CFL that the only question about him was, can this guy be a head coach? He had all the other necessary qualifications.
I'm going to listen to what you're saying and drop what I'm saying down. I didn't get a chance to tell you last time, so I'll tell you now. It doesn't mean that he'll be an NFL coach, head coach, but a quarterback's coach, an offensive coach.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, right? Yeah. It doesn't necessarily because I respect what you're saying and believe what you're saying is accurate, but that doesn't mean that an NFL team won't take a flyer on a guy who's a head coach of a team that wins a few Grey Cups, if he does, and has the ability to impart his knowledge on quarterbacks to the degree that he does. And that's really, as much as this has been a great thing for Kolaros, it's been a great thing for Milanovic. You know, it doesn't make him look bad. It's not all about Ricky Ray. It's not all about Ricky Ray.
It could end up being Trestman himself that ends up bringing in Milanovic as a quarterback's coach or, heck, even an offensive coordinator. You never know, you know.
There you go. So you see, you're wrong about him not having enough connections. He has enough connections. Lundy has one.
He's got a big one there.
There you
Speaking
go.
Of that, how great is it that Trestman's got the Bears 4-0? I mean, there
how
were so many people
that?
Bagging on him saying, oh, you know, who's this guy coming from the CFL? And there were so many. I mean, it was unbelievable, the response in America to Trestman getting the job. And I'm just so happy that he's went out there and proven it. And, you know, it's just sort of like carrying that CFL flag into the heart of the beast in the midway. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I know. But you know what bothers me, and it should bother you as an American? He's an American. You know, he went to the CFL knowing American football. You know, he went to the CFL not knowing CFL football.
That's true.
You know, so it's too bad. But like I said, I'll hold still on this. The success of Trestman will open doors for certain coaches or certain options for certain coaches in the CFL. It happened before with Bud Grant, and it'll happen again, you know. But, you know, at the end of the day, though, really, honestly, it's not just about him being a good coach. Trestman has other qualities that make him a winner, and that's what makes it happen. It's not whether he's a CFL coach or an NFL coach. It is the tactician in him that is, I think, the key. You know, it isn't even about, as far as I'm concerned, it isn't about offense or defense or quarterbacks. He is an extremely successful tactician. And, you know, I don't think there's a sport more than football that's all about tactics.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or schemes.
Yeah.
If you want to be specific. Okay, let's get back to the CFL, and we weren't done yet. The back half of the four games. Montreal is in Edmonton. I think that's going to be an incredible game. I truly do believe that that's going to be an incredible. You're going to see two teams that are vying for a playoff spot. This is a playoff game.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, it
this
is
a playoff game. So you know, as much as we've been you know fawning over Hamilton and Toronto and Saskatchewan and BC, Montreal and Edmonton is going to be an incredible game. It's a playoff spot game.
Oh, yeah. So, Riley's out for the year? Or is he... Is
I was just reading on CFL.ca that he's day-to-day. You know, he's just...
Okay.
you know, it's that he put it this way. They're putting him through the protocol.
Yeah.
Okay. And the protocol means that he won't be back for at least 4 or 5 weeks. And what is that? Where does that put us?
Right. That's yeah. That's a year. Okay. So yeah. So
I don't think we'll see. I don't think. I've been wrong before. I didn't think that Ray was really hurt, and he's been out how many weeks? So
yeah, it's been
you know.
Almost a month now. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I
you
just,
know, I didn't really. I mean,
I,
the only
I
thing I got on my foot. Yeah. No. I don't know who they're going to start either. And it'll be interesting. It will be interesting. Is Nichols available or is he hurt?
No, he's on the injured reserve. He's I think he broke his ACL. Yeah, he was out for the year.
In the first game.
Yeah, yeah. In the first preseason game. Matter of fact, I think it was his first snap.
Pretty much was his.
Yeah.
It was. I'm starting to remember vaguely. Yeah, and it was in Edmonton too.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's so sad when you think about it. Dude destroyed his ankle in the playoff game, and then first game back, he tears his ACL. I mean, that's rough, man.
And do you wonder why their GM is protective of their quarterback?
Yeah, I can understand. Wow.
Yeah, when you think about it, right, looking back, I mean, the last thing he wants is something else. Probably why he was so ragging on his offensive line.
Offensive line, yeah,
right?
So they're just letting the guy get beat down.
Yeah,
but
you didn't want to see any more of that.
They got an interesting decision at quarterback because they got like two guys that are totally opposite. They got, you know, 40-something-year-old Kerry Joseph, and then they got a young guy in Crompton who's like what 22 or 23. So you couldn't have like a bigger difference.
I think you're gonna have Joseph's gonna be the guy.
Joseph, okay.
Joseph is to blame for what happened against the Argos, but you know
yeah.
he is what he is, right? He is what he is.
Yeah. So who are you picking to win?
I have to go. I got to go against my Edmonton Eskimos,
wow.
and I'm going to have to say that it will be Montreal that wins.
Okay. So
and I think Montreal will win because they will have the more experienced and better defense, and I think that the offense is going to be a saw-off, in my opinion. I think the offense is going to be pretty much a saw-off, you know, and I think the difference is going to be the mastery that Montreal has in defense this year over what Edmonton has.
Wow. Okay.
Do you think Edmonton will win?
No, I agree with you. I think Montreal. I'm just hoping to see the former Heisman Trophy winner, Troy Smith, hopefully get some extra playing time. I think this would be a good time to get him out there. And
sure, why not?
Yeah.
Sure, why not? Absolutely. Then we've got Winnipeg and Calgary.
Oh,
this is a throwaway game. This is the game. This is the game that, you know, they might as well not even play.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah, I don't even know why Winnipeg bothered even to get on the plane and show up. I mean, man,
Having said that, Winnipeg will win.
Yeah, exactly. I was just like, watch them come out and win in a blowout.
I don't think it'll be a blowout, but I think, you know what, like you said and like you started to say, on any given day, any team can beat another team. It is highly unlikely that Calgary will lose to Winnipeg. Calgary wants to finish first. They know the value of having not to play that extra game in the playoffs, and they will be playing for that very luxury.
Yep, absolutely. And they're just, you know, playing for the ability to host the Rough Riders in the West Final and get the benefit of having Rider Nation sell that game off for them and make a little extra money. So on that note, that was my little pot shot of Calgary, but... yeah, that's just, you know, and you know, honestly, if I could just add, like, when it comes to Calgary, you know, it's a great city, and that I would definitely love to live there. It looks like a beautiful place to live and everything, and but man, do they have some seriously, come on, guys, what's going on in Calgary, people? Come on, let's get behind the team already. Your team went to the Grey Cup last year. You're the best team in the league this year. Where are the fans? Come on. You know, this is Western Canada. We understand in the East the whole perception there, but come on, Calgary, really?
You know what? I'm not going to argue that, but I'm getting distracted by our buddy. There it is. Here, hang on a second. I got an idea. I'm going to try something. All right, here we go. I believe that game is going to be the game that helps Calgary begin the clinching of first place in the West. It's an important thing for them to do, and I just don't think that Winnipeg has the oh, well, that didn't work out the way I'd hoped. I just don't think that Winnipeg has. Robbie, what's going on?
Not much, man. You?
You said you didn't like what Mike said. What didn't you like that Mike said?
I think he said Hamilton was going to No. Said Edmonton was going to lose.
Right, to
yeah.
Calgary.
Yeah, I don't think that.
No, happened. Sorry, to Montreal.
Montreal. No. Montreal's got no, how do you say that? Stability at the quarterback position. Cavillo is gone. He's out. They have nobody to perform his duties at the quarterback position.
And who do Edmonton have?
Well,
because that's the question we were asking. That was the question Mike was asking. Is who
yeah.
who is Edmonton going to provide as cannon fodder for the Montreal Alouettes defense?
Well, Riley's gone, right? How long is
right.
Riley out for?
Forget his name for now. Just erase his name off the team roster.
What's that?
Because he's done for the year.
I don't think
we'll see him back again. Yeah. The only way you'll see him back is if Edmonton makes the playoffs.
Oh, they will make the playoffs.
Oh, wow.
Well, I don't know that they'll be able to do it without him. You know,
yeah.
As much as I pulled for Edmonton because I believe they had a guy that could lead them into the promised land. Without him, you know, they're a headless horseman.
Yeah. What were you trying to do, Frank? You're sitting here like, hold on, I'm going to try something here. And then all of a sudden I hear my phone ringing. I'm like,
what do you think I was trying to do?
I don't know. Try to get me on the radio with you?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to do.
I found it weird because I'm sitting here and I'm jotting down on Facebook and arguing with my nephew and all that, and then I'm listening to you, and you're like, "Gonna try something here," and I'm sitting there and I'm like, "What's he gonna
well,
be trying?"
Well, you were saying, "I wish I could say something to Mike," so I was just giving you the chance.
Uh-huh. I never said I wish I'd say something to Mike. So what Mike said was actually, let me go back to my computer. That was crazy. You got me all flipped out here.
Essentially, you were saying that Edmonton will win, and you disagreed with Mike and I that in fact, Montreal would win.
What's that?
You disagreed with the fact that we, both Mike and I, because I won't throw Mike under the bus here. I'll go under the bus with him. We both thought that Montreal would beat Edmonton. And for me to say that Edmonton's, it's the first time in a few weeks that I've said that Edmonton's going to lose.
Okay.
So they'll probably win.
I think Edmonton will win. I'm almost guaranteed positive that they
but
will
you didn't,
win.
But you didn't answer the important question that was asked. Well, who's going to be the quarterback that's going to lead them to victory? That's what Mike and I were trying to figure out. We felt maybe it'd be Nichols.
Yeah.
Okay.
It could be Nichols, yeah.
Okay. Okay, listen.
What about Crompton?
Well,
you know,
how many reps has he had? How many reps has he had?
I don't know. I don't think he's had any this season.
Exactly.
Okay.
And you really want to put it? Mike and I sat here and discussed the merits of good teams that have that good coaches and teams that don't throw their quarterbacks to the wolves.
Yeah.
And to me, it sounds like if they put Compton in, they'd be throwing him to the wolves, wouldn't they? Do they really need to?
No, not really, because you know why? They got Kerry Joseph.
And that's who will end up playing.
Yeah.
And that's what it'll be
Kerry
Joseph.
we had him here in Ottawa with the Renegades for, I think, about 2 years or whatever, and he did a great job, you know.
We had him here in Toronto.
Yeah.
And we decided Ray was a better quarterback.
Yeah.
And Edmonton too decided that Ray was a better quarterback for Toronto.
Yeah.
And everybody's right.
True, true.
Well, okay, so tell me what you think of the games this week. And I've got one more interview to do. We got lots of time. You want to talk about the CFL? And I was going to ask Mike this. Mike, let's talk a little bit about, you heard in the interviews that I asked a couple of guys about NBC and the games in the U.S. and the fact that their families could see the games and they could talk to their families about the game that they played. Give us an instruction on how many ways you can watch the CFL in the United States.
Okay. The easiest way and the guaranteed way for every single game is ESPN3. You can watch those online, and the ESPN streams all the games from TSN. And NBC Sports Network covers a couple games on TV. Obviously, since the NFL and baseball and hockey's all kicked off, their coverage just went down a little bit. Yeah. But during the summertime, it was basically almost like every single game was on ESPN2 or NBC, and so the CFL had a pretty good amount of exposure. But no, but every single game, ESPN3.com, they stream all of the games from TSN. So there you go.
Do you know if we can watch them here?
Yeah, like online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually we can't watch what you guys can. It's a territorial thing.
Yeah, I think that may be the case, because I believe, isn't TSN technically ESPN's property in Canada?
Yeah, right. Yeah. They're partners.
You may be able to. I mean, you could try it. You just go to ESPN3.com and see if it allows you. If it can, it'll block you, but it may work. You never know.
Yeah, a couple of players asked me how people can watch those games. They didn't know how.
Yeah. Yeah, ESPN3 is the best one.
Which I found ridiculous. I would think that why wouldn't the teams let the players know that their families back home can watch the games? I mean, that's a great selling point.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they may not know either. It's just, you know, like the CFL, when you go to their website and they have a section called U.S. Broadcast and there's just nothing in it. It's just like, I don't get what they're doing.
They talk about the agreement, and they say, and I think I remember reading that, and they say, this year, unlike last year, they'll be showing all our games.
Right.
But they don't tell you how.
Yeah, and it's just like, they've been, and the thing is, all the games have always been on ESPN3.com. You know, it's not like this is a new thing. Yeah, I mean, I started watching back in 2010, and every single game, I was streaming all the games. No, it's been since TSN got the contract in 2008. ESPN's been streaming all the games.
Get out of here!
Yeah.
Of course. Why would I care? I can watch the games here on television.
Right. Exactly.
Right. So why would I care?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. So no, that's awesome. Robbie, you asked me where I live. Where do you live? You live in Ottawa?
Yeah.
Do they have TSN in Ottawa?
Yeah, we have TSN. I hope we have TSN in Ottawa. I think you have TSN everywhere in Canada, no?
Yeah, you do. You do. I'm just pulling your leg because you live in Ottawa. It's a foreign country.
Oh, my God. You're throwing me under the bus, Frank. You're throwing me under the bus, my friend.
I'm throwing you under the train. I'm not giving you any chance
at
all.
The train. Through the bus. Threw you under the train.
Yes. Threw you under the bus that got run over by the train.
Yeah.
Just to do all this stuff. All right, so the CFL playoffs are coming upon us. Is it too early to discuss the playoffs and who will win the West as far as you're concerned this year? Mike, you can go first.
It's going to be the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And the reason is number one, they have the best fans in Canada, hands down. Number two, they have the best fans in Canada. Number three, wherever they play, whether they have to go to BC, to Calgary, there's going to be 15,000 to 20,000 Rider fans at that game, and we're going to bring the house down. We're not afraid. They go into anywhere. It's on. We're coming. BC, we're coming. Calgary, we're coming. They know. They know the talent we have. We're hurt right now, but give us a couple weeks. Come playoff time, we're going to get a lot of key guys back, especially on the offensive line. And most importantly, we're getting Corey Sheets back. And when we get Corey Sheets back, it's on. All right, that's the MOP. He's the best player in the league, and we're coming. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Okay, so Saskatchewan wins the Western Division. BC plays Calgary. You have BC. Are we going to have the same six teams? Are we all going to agree that it'll be Toronto, Montreal, Hamilton, Calgary, Saskatchewan, BC?
Yep.
I think Robbie has Edmonton crossing over.
Yeah, I think Edmonton will cross over.
And will they cross over at Montreal's expense?
Yep.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. No, that's fine. And so.
You know, I'm about what, two and a half hours from Montreal.
Yeah.
You know, I can get in a car. I don't drive. I don't have my license. But I can get in a car with a few of my boys, drive out to Montreal and watch a game, right?
Right.
But you know, I just have doubts on my. I just have doubts on Montreal without Cavillo.
Okay, Robbie, did you know that if Montreal beats Edmonton this weekend, that they're going to be up by three games with only four games left.
Yeah.
And probably the tiebreaker to boot.
So,
yeah.
And for the crossover to happen, Edmonton has to finish with a better record. If they finish in a tie, Montreal still keeps the spot. So, I don't know. I don't see enough games left for Edmonton to make up ground.
No, I'd like to see Edmonton in there, you know? Like, I don't know. I'm all crazed out here for a second there.
Well, hey, listen. You should get your friends, get them in your car. Oh, no, it's in Edmonton. Never mind. For a second there, I thought it was in Montreal. It would have been great for you to go to see Edmonton play Montreal in Montreal.
Yeah
that game's that game. I don't know if you were listening when Mike and I were talking. That's the most important game of the weekend. Not the most entertaining.
Yeah.
But the most important game of the weekend with playoff ramifications.
I won't be able to.
Edmonton and Montreal.
That's more important than Toronto, Hamilton, and Saskatchewan,
yeah.
BC?
It won't change whether they're in the playoffs or not. Doesn't
wow.
matter. If Toronto or Hamilton wins, it won't change
yeah.
them being in the playoffs.
Oh, that's
but
true.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
No.
Yeah,
I'm not saying.
You're right.
No.
Yeah.
You're right. I know what you're going to say, and what you're saying is the game between Hamilton and Toronto is about who finishes first.
Yeah.
It's very important. I get that. But to me, it doesn't matter as much who finished first as making the playoffs does in the CFL. So that's why, by virtue of that, I'm saying that the game with Montreal and Edmonton is far more important because Montreal literally this weekend could eliminate and erase any opportunity Edmonton has of making the playoffs. It's a playoff game.
And I would be really pissed if that happened.
So Frank and Robbie, let me ask both of you, since, you know, Robbie, you're a Ticat fan, Frank, you're an Argo fan, and your two teams are going head-to-head this Friday night. So
yep.
I guess, gentlemen, please make your cases for why your teams are going to win.
I think Burris is going to pull some strings out of heaven and just make some good plays. The running game is going to be a good one. Because Gable is just going to run the shit out of the defense in Toronto.
Wow.
And, yeah, I think Hamilton.
He's done well against Toronto this year.
He's done very good against Toronto.
Okay, so, Frank, what's your case for the Argos to win?
Argos are going to win because they're Toronto and the Hamilton's Hamilton.
You're not dissing my Ticats, brother.
No, I'm dissing Hamilton. I'm just kidding. I'm not dissing your Ticats. I'm just saying, hey, listen, regardless of who, really what has to happen for Hamilton, if Hamilton wins both games against the Argos,
yeah.
then we're talking. Then the gauntlet has been thrown.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So as far as I'm concerned, if Toronto wins the first game, all that matters then is the playoffs. It's all over, you know, with the crying. And since Hamilton fans are much more accustomed to crying, They'll feel more suited to it.
True, true.
So is Ottawa far from Toronto? Is that something?
Ottawa is the shorter distance between Toronto and Montreal.
Yeah.
So, Robbie, you plan on going to the game?
It's about 4.5 hours to Toronto from Ottawa.
And about 10 to Montreal.
No, it's about 2 to 2.5 to Montreal.
Oh, so 6 or 7 then to Montreal from Toronto? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, from
the last
Toronto
time I went,
well, about 7, yeah.
The last time I went in a jet. It was on 4 wheels, but it still was a jet.
You were speeding, were you not?
I was not, because I was not driving.
Well, I know what you were doing. You were on Rahib Ismail's back, the rocket. You were just flying with him, right?
There you go. That's all I was doing. That's what I was doing. I'll take that. I'll take that as a positive yes. No,
oh, yeah.
It'll be great, Mike. It really is great, and I'm looking forward to meeting you down here at one of the games this year, or as you suggested, next year if Hamilton and Toronto play in their new stadium, their first game of the year.
I hope you guys come to Ottawa.
Robbie, are you going to go to the game on Friday? You're going to make the trip to Toronto, or what's going on?
No, probably not. No.
Oh, okay.
I'm feeling like under the weather and all that, right? So I've been sick for the past week and a half, and I'm just like,
Robbie, do you want me to make a sign saying hi, Robbie, when TSN points the camera at us?
Go for it. I'll be watching. You know what? I'm going to tape it. But I'm going
to. What about? Okay, so Robbie, let's say it comes to the playoffs and it's the East Finals. And it's Hamilton at Toronto. Would you go to that game or?
Oh yeah.
All right.
Oh yeah.
So if you do, you know you got to join Frank and John in section 134B.
Yeah. They just better have tickets for me for the game.
Yeah, exactly. They do.
There
yeah, Frank,
you go.
You got to make it happen.
If I'm making a $150 trip out to Toronto to watch the game, I can't afford to be buying a $60 ticket.
How about a $49 ticket?
No, I can't even afford to buy a ticket. But then again, you know, I know a few people for Toronto and a few people for Hamilton that they can probably get me a few tickets, right?
There you go.
And it's like, you know, when Edmonton comes to Montreal, I can call Cavis Reed and I can say, hey, you know, dude, hook me up with a couple tickets, man, you know? And he'd be like, sure, little pistol, you know?
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and like, there's Danny Webb and Bugsy, the equipment staff in Toronto. I'd be like, yo, Bugs, you want to hook me up with a couple tickets or something for the game? He'd be like, sure, man, you know?
Well, so what about that playoff game then? Then you should be able to make that call for the playoff game.
Which one?
Toronto, Hamilton.
Toronto. Do you know any people with Hamilton that can
Hamilton,
hook you up?
Well, the equipment manager they have in, because I was the assistant equipment manager in 206 for the Cats,
yeah.
And the equipment manager that they have now was just like a, how do you say, he wasn't really part of the Ticat staff.
Oh.
He was just hanging around all the time and blah blah blah. But I think he was the equipment manager for McMaster University.
Cool.
Yeah,
right.
Drew Shaloka. I can't even pronounce his last name, but yeah, it's something.
No worries,
like
no worries.
Something.
So, in all seriousness now, we weren't finished this. So, which two teams are going to meet in the Grey Cup?
Saskatchewan.
Rob?
Saskatchewan and Hamilton.
Wow.
So, Mike, he's half right. He's half right.
Yeah.
Which half?
Saskatchewan and Hamilton. That's what I'm saying.
Which is the answer as far as you're concerned? I know you're saying Saskatchewan in the Grey Cup. Who will they be playing?
It'll be
the Argos.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And though I'm a Ryder fan, I'm picking the Argos to still win the Grey Cup.
Well, if the Argos make it to the Grey Cup, I'm going to have to make some phone calls to some people in Saskatchewan to see if I want to go to the game, but John tells me it's not worth staying there because it's just a zoo, and you'll have to stay so far away. It won't be as much fun to go into all the events. But if I can find somebody that lives close to the events, and stay there for a reasonable price, I wouldn't mind going to that Grey Cup game if Toronto was in it.
Yeah, well, I got a few friends that live in Saskatchewan, and I'm almost positive I can say, hey, Gay, listen, I'm on my way. It's Grey Cup out there. I'm on my way out there. Can I stay at your house? They'd be like, sure.
Awesome.
So, and plus, I have my aunt and uncle that live out in somewhere out in Saskatchewan. I don't even know where. Esterhazy or something out there. So.
Cool.
So like, if you got family there. Are you from Saskatchewan, Robbie? Or
no,
is your family from there?
No, my aunt and uncle moved out there about 20 years ago, I would think.
Wow.
20-some years ago, yeah. I went out. It was funny because I went with my mom out there, and it was really funny because my cousin was like, hey, Rob, do you want to go golfing? I'm like, golfing? I'm like, yeah, okay, you know. So we go to a golf course. You pay $20 to play, but you don't just do 18 holes. Once you're done the 18 holes, you can go another 18. Then you can go another 18. You can just, like, keep playing golf all day long.
For $20?
For $20.
What?
I was kind of like freaking because here in Ottawa, you want to go play golf. It's like $49 or whatever, $40, you know, plus your beer, plus your card, plus this, plus that. You know, by the end of the night, you're out of the golf course drunk as a skunk, $100 out of your pocket, you know.
Dude. Wow. Okay. Frank, you play golf at all? Or?
A little bit. I chased a little white ball once in a while.
Yeah. Excuse my language, but I call it whack fuck. You whack the ball and you're like, fuck. Yeah.
More or less, to me, golf is the game where I'll describe it this way, where you hit the ball and you go, oh, damn it. Oh, not bad.
Yeah.
You play 18 holes. As long as you get one good shot, you know, and that's out of like 100 on average for people, you're back again.
Yeah. Well, it was really funny because I played in the Ottawa Rough Rider Alumni Golf Tournament, and they see this little water boy guy going up, and I'm all tense and nervous. I got Tony Gabriel, Russ Jackson, Ron Stewart, Mo Racine, you know, Jerry Organ. You know, they're all looking at me, and I'm like, oh. So I, like, smash that ball right down the middle of the fairway. I'm like, phew. And they're all like, wow, holy moly. I'm like, yeah, water boy, all the way, boys, you know? So they were all like, that was a good shot.
Next, Hall of Famer. How does the Hall of Famer follow that one up? Okay, guys, we're gonna take a short break because I'm going to do the last interview that I did, and it was with Patrick Watkins. When we come back, I don't know what we're going to talk about, but we'll figure something out.
A really great game. Have you ever had a game that great where you've been that much of an impact on a game?
I can't remember, to be honest with you. I don't know. Probably been in recent memory. Yeah, probably that one. And I remember one game where I had like a field goal block, interception return, a couple fast breakups. So I mean, it's few and far in between, I guess, is what I'm saying. But I mean, it feels good just to go out there and execute my assignments when they make my call, or they give me the call to go, things like that, and just being in the right place at the right time.
How soon do you feel it's your game, that first great player when you step on the field, or is it just a big blur? You just do your job and then you look back and go, oh, yeah, I did that and that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's one of the things where, you know, if you want to be one of the better players in the league, when the plays come your way, you have to make them. And it's just one of them things where coach always find a way to put me in the right spot at the right time. And he has faith in me, so I wouldn't be out there. So I go ahead and try to reward him, reward his faith with playmaking ability.
Yeah, the coach is very positive when it comes to your length. He refers to your length.
Right.
You're a tall man, but you're not a slow man. You're very quick for a tall man.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Do you think you surprise people? You know.
At first, I believe, you know, it catch you off guard. I've heard that before. That you know, I'm a little quicker than people think. And I try to use that to my advantage. You know, I'm not as big as, you know, a lot of people, but like you said, I'm tall and I'm quick, and you know, that's two things that I can use in my favor. I try to.
What is it about the defense here this year that that doesn't give up? You know, when I look at your defense, I think of the bend but not break rule. Mm-hmm. It really seems I'm thinking the 2013 Argos. If there was a dictionary, a football dictionary, the team's defense would be in the dictionary under bend not break.
Yeah, it's one of the things where, you know, even though we may not get things right from time to time as far as execution, we're gonna play as fast as we can, and sometimes when you're playing as fast and as hard as you can, then it makes up for the little errors. Sometimes, you know, you can't substitute just the willing to go on the goddamn make plays, even if you're wrong. As long as you're doing it fast and to the best of your ability, sometimes, you know, you can still be right. So it's one of the things where even if we're doing things wrong, we still believe in what we got going on, and we still believe that we play as hard as we can, and we're still going to be tough to beat.
When you look around the dressing room, let's say at halftime, and you look around, it's getting to be a thing where you really don't know where the good plays are going to come from.
there's so many playmakers out here, man. We all over the field. I realized that earlier in the year that, man, yeah, a big play can come from anybody, anytime, man. That's the great thing about this defense is, you know, like I said, Coach Jones knows his personnel, and he knows how to put us in a position to make plays. And, you know, when you have a coordinator that can put you in the right place, or at least knit a ball to make a play, then, you know, you got to reward him. Just got to.
You're aware that he's the assistant manager, right? Assistant GM.
Yeah, I'm aware of it. Yes, I am.
Have you ever had a defensive coordinator who is assistant GM or you know, have that kind of, literally have the power that if you don't listen to him,
right,
your butt could be hit right by the back of the door. Is that something new to you, or have you seen it before?
No, this is the first time I've been in this situation, but I mean I don't let that discourage me or make me nervous. Like I said, I believe Coach Jones knows the type of player I am. I can't put my finger on, you know, what exactly is thought of me, but I mean, he knows that I can make plays, and he knows that if you put me in the right spot and just, you know, just believing, trusting me, and like I trust in him, then, you know, I'm gonna try to reward him the best he can, and he's gonna try to reward me the best he can possible.
Yeah, it just seems to me as a fan looking in that, like it is in the dressing room, it's also in the management office where it's team. You know, there aren't really that big an ego on either, whether Milanovic, Barker, any of the assistant coaches. It's all the same. You guys really do seem to work together. Is that something hard to put together? And now that you've seen how it happens, what did you learn from this being able to happen, this kind of teamwork approach where it's all for one?
As long as you realize and understand that no one person is bigger than the game of football. I mean, the football was here before a lot of us got here. It's going to be here after we leave. So the game of football is first and foremost. And as long as you can understand that and you can put yourself above the game or the organization, then you're going to be okay. You know, in my opinion, a lot of, you know, you can be talented, but like I said, no one person is ever bigger than the game. Football is going to be here 100 years from now. So.
Are you aware the games are shown in the U.S. now?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I have actually have people back home watching me and telling me I play good back home in Tallahassee. So,
That's a nice feeling.
Yeah, it's a great feeling. Like, and sometimes you don't even realize it, and they're calling to say, "Hey, man, we seen you playing, and you know you did a great job." And man, it's a good feeling.
So you get one of these. Hey, Ma, you won't believe what I did. I saw it, son. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I get it. My mom is a dedicated fan. She gonna watch either way. Like she, her and my wife, like, they gonna watch. Like, that's a given. If they got to, they'll go online and stream it or whatever they got to do. They're going to watch the game. So that's dedicated. But it does make it a lot easier now that, you know, it's on TV. Like I said, a lot more of my friends are watching the games now.
Do you still feel connected with family and friends that way?
I do. We have something to talk about. You know, they're going to ask me what I was thinking when I got beat. you know, what was you thinking when you made the play? So, I mean, it's a good feeling. And like I said, give us something to talk about back home.
I'm happy for you.
No, thank you.
And thanks for the great game.
Thank you.
Okay. And good luck the next game.
The following is a message from the 2012 Grey Cup champions, your Toronto Argonauts. If you didn't hear your voice, there's still time to be a part of next year's crowd. It's okay to pile on. Get your 2013 season tickets today. Call 416-341-ARGO or go to argonauts.ca. Argo!
What is the definition of victory? After four failed attempts, 64-year-old Canadian endurance swimmer Diane Nyad is the first to swim across the 160-kilometer Florida Strait from Cuba to Florida in just 53 hours without a shark tank. Right after reaching the shore of Key West, this is what our hero Diane Nyad had to say, swollen lips and all.
I got three messages. One is...
We should never, ever give up.
Okay.
Do it. You're never too old to chase your dreams.
That's right.
It looks like a solitary sport, but it's a team.
Now, how do you like that? Now that's what life's all about. And anybody who follows this program to any degree knows that I believe that with all my heart, that there's more to life than football, hockey, and any other sport. But really, from each and every sport, you can learn a lesson, and you can make good friends and people who can give you good advice, and you'll have your back for the rest of your life. You're here. Don't worry. All right. So guys, we got about 10 minutes left. Ottawa next year. I wanted to think of something to talk about. Where do you think the Ottawa Rough Riders will fit in the Eastern Division next year? Will they be out of the playoffs, in the playoffs, second or first? Robbie?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, since I'm an Ottawa native, a former Ottawa Rough Rider alumni, it would be nice to see them finish first place. It would be great to see that. But you know what? Basically almost every... Actually, I'm kind of stepping in shit right now, because I'm saying every team that's a new team that comes into a league always finishes last. Well, if you look in 92, Baltimore came into the CFL. The American teams came into the CFL. Baltimore went right away and won the Stanley out of the Grey Cup. Right?
But so, you remember why, right? You remember why.
Oh,
why
yeah,
did they win the Grey Cup?
Because they had Don Matthews as a head coach, I believe.
And no imports.
They had Tracy
they were
Hamm
all
as
imports.
Quarterback.
And they were all imports.
Yep. But, yeah, I think Ottawa will do good. They'll probably finish second or third, because they're going to have great players coming, like all rookie quarterbacks coming in, like Kolaris, Mitchell,
Yeah, I get you. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I just wanted to add. I just posted on your page on Facebook some of the photos of the new stadium for the Red Blacks. But he's right. I think they're going to come in and compete right away. You know, they got Montreal's definitely going to be down, so that third spot in the East is right there for them to come in if they can get a quarterback, and they can certainly challenge. I mean, we both all agree Toronto and Hamilton are your top two teams in the East next year, so.
Yep.
They can definitely get that third spot. I mean, it's just between them and Montreal, really, because Winnipeg is in the West, and I don't think Winnipeg's going to challenge them in crossing over. So
no.
They just got to worry about Edmonton, I guess, crossing over. And other than that, if they can get over Montreal, they have a shot.
There's no question. Ottawa next year is going to get, and it isn't because we're saying it hopefully, factually, there has never been a draft that has been suited for the success of the expansion team more than the one that we'll be experiencing this year in December.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
There's none. And that's a good thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. You know,
nope.
I understand why teams don't want other teams. Like when the NBA had their rule that Toronto and Vancouver came into the NBA, they weren't allowed to have the number one pick for 5 years. There was a moratorium for 5 years for them to have a first-round pick. They were basically dooming both those teams into losing seasons for a very extended time. And that isn't good. That isn't good. Yes, it's good for the rest of the teams that there's always a team worse than them, but what good is it really?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm proud of what what Mr. Cohen and company have done. They've seen the good point in having an expansion team that has a good start, at least on the field. Give it a chance to have its fans enjoy the game, and then therefore the next time there's expansion or an option for expansion for a city, they're going to say, well, at least we'll have a chance to have a good team right away. We don't have to suffer for 5-10 years with mediocrity.
Yep.
So that would be great. It's a good thing. It's a good promo. You know what I mean? Buy one, get one free. So, yeah, I think Ottawa will do well the first year as well. I think they'll be, at the very least, fighting for a playoff, a real fight for the playoffs. In fact, I guess what? That will mean there'll be five teams in the West and four teams in the East.
Yeah.
And it means that the crossover could still happen, but the crossover will be much different. It'll be a much harder thing to achieve.
Yeah.
And you don't see them, you guys don't see them, well, I guess, how soon do you see them expanding beyond Hamilton, Ottawa, after they come in next year? Do you see expansion within 2 or 3 years after that?
Yeah,
I would think for Quebec City, like, okay, when it comes to expansion, the one thing that's going to really determine how fast that goes is what happens in the next CBA negotiations and how much the cap goes up and how much the players get from all this new revenue, right? And listening to the early reports, basically the owners are hoping a situation where both sides are in agreement that the cap should go up anywhere from 500 to a million, you know, than from where it is now. But the owners wanted a more gradual, over, say, 4 to 5 years process where it just goes up maybe, you know, 50 to 100,000 every year for a couple of years and then gradually works its way up. And if they get that, there will be owners lining up to get CFL teams because then every CFL team is capable of generating anywhere from $2 to $5 million in profit just off top.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's going to determine if they get a good deal. We'll see. We'll be hearing Quebec City. We're going to be hearing Maritimes. We're going to be hearing all kind of stuff.
I agree with the Maritimes, but I don't really agree with Quebec City because you already have a Montreal team in there. Why would you want to have another team, like another Montreal team out there? Do you know
Quebec
what I'm saying?
Quebec City is Montreal, or isn't it a separate city?
Well, no, it's like Montreal, Quebec. And it's Quebec City. Like Montreal.
Okay, well,
think
Rob, about
Rob,
it like this.
So
which
different.
Which one
it's
was...
Toronto and Ottawa. Toronto and Ottawa. Rob,
yeah.
Toronto and Ottawa. Never mind Hamilton. Toronto and Ottawa.
Yeah.
You know what
Ottawa,
I mean? There's three teams in Ontario. Ottawa is Ontario. But let's take Ottawa out of the picture. There's two teams in Ontario. Quebec and Montreal would be a match for Toronto and Hamilton.
Okay, yeah.
Right, but I don't think Mike is saying. I don't think Mike is saying in spite of the Eastern team, you know, the team out on the East Coast. He's saying. I think what he's saying is you guys are only discussing the order that the teams come in, not whether they come in or not. Right, Mike?
Yeah.
I think eventually both cities will have. Yeah, both will have teams. Yep.
Yeah.
So you know, it isn't that big a deal.
And, I mean, imagine how great a Quebec City-Montreal rivalry would be.
Oh, that would
Labor
be.
Labor Day at the Big O. They have the stadium half and half, half of it, and Quebec City fans half side, the other half is Montreal. I mean, think about it.
That's great. That's kind of like hockey when you have, like, well, sorry, back then when you had the Canadians against the Nordiques.
Yeah.
You know, that was... That
oh,
was,
they hated each other. They
oh,
hated each other.
That was just like... For all the fans out there watching that, it was just like, they were like, yeah,
heaven.
I'm going to watch the Canadians against the Nordiques,
right.
You know, and it brought everyone up, and they're all like, yeah, let's go, you know, same year in Ottawa, when Ottawa had to play, I think it was Toronto was our Labor Day football thing.
Okay, wrap it up, Mike. Mike, give you a chance now. Rob, let Mike get his 2 cents in. Mike?
Okay, yeah, no, I just wanted to say, you know, like for the CFL, I think getting Quebec City is great just from a rivalry standpoint because it helps the league. Like Winnipeg's season was a total flush. It's a total waste, but they had the banjo ball. Fans came out. It was really exciting. The team won. And things like that, it just makes the season better, and it'll make the league better as a whole if they can get more great rivalries because Montreal needs one. They don't have one right now.
Thanks, Mike. We're down to a half minute. Rob J. Emery, thank you for joining us on the program. Mike from Minnesota, as usual, always a pleasure to have you on.
All right,
and we'll talk to you guys again next week if you have time.
All right.
And you've been watching or listening to Candid Frank Live here on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again next time.
Thanks, guys.